Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And I've got a few different introductions that I could do for this, for this episode today.
Okay.
One of them is someone recently said, hey, I've got a good idea for one of these special episodes that you do, episode, you know, 450 or 500.
Okay.
Why don't you talk about...
Neither of them.
No, this isn't. This was just somebody said back when we said, hey, if you got a good idea for episode 450, tell us what they are. Someone said, what you should do is go into classic science fiction television.
Ooh.
And tell us what your thoughts are about the classic science fiction television, things like Star Trek and Buzz Rogers and what was it? Not Deep Space Nine. What's the other one? Battlestar Galactica, the original, and all these other...
Stargate.
Well, again, that's not classic. Well, maybe that is classic. Well, maybe it's from the 90s. Maybe 90s or 2000s is classic now.
But anyway, 90s is now classic. You need to admit that to yourself.
What they were saying is mostly stuff from, like, before you were born, like up until the 80s, maybe. And and I had to say back, look, I grew up in a television without... I grew up in a home without a television. So I have no knowledge of most of those things. I have no nostalgia for any old television. I have no desire to watch any old television. Once someone's like, oh, you should really... I think it was a podcast that I listened to also had like another... Like the host also did another podcast. I can't remember what this was. Also had another podcast where they would watch Star Trek because they were all Star Trek fans.
Okay.
And they were like, oh, if you want to get into Star Trek, just, you know, start at this episode and carry... And I tried a few of their suggestions.
Yeah.
I've actually only ever seen one episode of any Star Trek where it's been recommended to me, watch this one, this is a good one. I've watched it and was like, oh, that was actually a pretty good 45 minutes of television, or whatever, however long it is. So all of the, pretty much anything that anybody's ever tried to do, Battlestar Galactica, the new one, watch the miniseries and get into it and start, you know, I bought the box set of those things, got about 6 or 7 episodes into it, and I was just like, nah, this just isn't
I
for me.
I think it's just not, these kind of shows are not something that you happen to at some point just get into and then watch them consecutively, you know. I think you have to be watching them at the time when they come out,
for you to have any connection with them,
and then you wait for the next week and for, you know, this kind
but
of
not
stuff.
Always, like, you had never seen the TV show Friends before, and we watched all of Friends, or you watched most. I watched quite a bit of it, but it just became our, like, hey, let's put on something dumb for a few minutes and watch it. Like, there are TV shows that you can go back to and watch. What I'm trying to say is that I have never watched any science fiction television series long term up until quite recently, actually. I think the only science fiction television that I've actually watched multiple seasons of and enjoy and mostly enjoyed most of it is The Expanse. Even we started watching the latest Star Trek Discovery series, and we watched the first season, and then we just never got back to the second season. Even people say, oh, it's good or whatever, like that. I just wasn't I think the only reason why I got to the end of that season of television of Discovery, Star Trek Discovery, was because we were watching it as it came out week by week. If I'd have been binge watching that, I would have got to probably episode 6 and just been like, ah, nah, it's just not.
Apparently,
it's not
the third season is supposed to be
exactly, and this
good
is
again.
Always the issue, because people say, oh, once you get to season 4 of the show, then it starts really getting really good. And often these are like American TV shows, and that could be like 60, 70 episodes in.
Yes,
I'm not interested in watching 60 or 70 episodes of something until you get to the seasons of Star Trek where it gets good.
But that's kind of like that. You can also say that about book series.
Yes, it is. But
right?
Here's the thing: I have all of the nostalgia for science fiction books. I have all the connections with science fiction books.
Yeah.
You know, science fiction, reading science fiction is the thing that I do.
Yeah.
Watching science fiction television is very much not the thing that I do.
And you have, like, good memories of, like, reading the science fiction book and again from the library.
Yeah, but again, it's not just that. It's I have connections with that, but the kind of science fiction that I like, I can find in novels.
Right.
And the kind of science fiction that I don't like, I most often find in television. And the science fiction that I do like and don't like can both be found in movies, but a movie is over in an hour and a half or 2.5 hours.
It's a bounded time frame. Like it's a known length. It ends there. Yeah. That's it.
There's never a time when I'm getting into a science fiction movie where I'm thinking, even if this is bad, if I just keep watching another 40 hours worth of this, I'll get to the stuff that's good.
Yes.
Yes, I understand what you mean. Like, it's, there's a boundedness. There's sort of like, there's a start point and an end point.
Exactly.
All of which is to say that when people, when Apple TV was released and people were talking about what the launch shows are of this, and we got ourselves a years of free Apple TV from, I think, did you buy an iPad or an iPhone?
Yes,
I can't remember.
The iPad came with a year worth of Apple TV
and
for
we,
free.
Did we start watching one show called C, where there's lots of blind people?
No,
and,
I didn't.
That was, well, I think I watched that. I think maybe that was a show that they had for free at some point, and I got maybe 10 minutes into it, and I was like, oh, no, this show is not for me.
Yeah.
Then we watched Ted Lasso and very much enjoyed that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Such a nice show.
Yeah, it's so nice to have a comedy about nice people being nice to each other and people learning how to be nice to each other, which is so good. Anyway, and then we were like, what we should do is we should check out For All Mankind, because this could be the kind of show that's, and I saw it recommended quite a few places, like, oh, season one was good, and now that season two is out, it's kind of like the whole journey is a lot better. So we watched, started a while ago actually though, didn't we? And, but we finished last night the final episode of For All Mankind.
Season two.
There is a season three. I think they finished filming it, but it's not out for another year or something. Yeah. But they did finish filming. It was going to be, I think there was a delay, and I was just reading the Wikipedia page. There was a delay in filming the last two episodes.
Pandemic?
Yeah, of course.
Related, probably.
But they'd actually done all the filming of all of the first, all of the second season up until like last February. And then they had a break and then finished off filming it in August or whatever. Sorry, I was knocking the desk here. So we watched it, and we will talk a bit more about this. We're going to avoid spoilers for the length of this episode, because I don't think we ever need to talk about specifics of what happens and who does what and all of the kind of stuff. But what I found in For All Mankind is the kind of science fiction that I normally find in books, and I suddenly find it on television.
Yes.
Not because it's more intelligent than other science fiction.
Oh.
Not because it's better than other science fiction television, but it's the kind of science fiction that I wanted, and I'll get onto specifics later on. But here's the setup. Juliana didn't know anything about this TV show.
Nope.
I knew one thing about this television show, and this is revealed in the opening setup. So we're going to tell you the opening setup. So this little bit of surprise that caught Juliana out when we were watching literally the first 10 minutes of the show, we'll spoil, but then it sets everything up. So it starts off and lots of people are standing around in America. It's 1969 in America. Period piece. All of this is period drama.
Yeah.
And everyone's standing around watching a video, and they're like, oh, we're having some trouble getting this video feed from the moon, but we're expecting the astronauts to come out and walk down the steps and, you know, make their big announcement that, you know, they're, you know, one small step for a man, one giant leap for all mankind, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it climbs down, and everyone's looking a bit annoyed, and all these American people are sitting in the America, the outpost, which is this bar in Houston, where there's the Johnson Space Center is, where Mission Control is, and
all the
people standing around,
all the NASA people hanging out,
and the NASA people, the other astronauts all sitting around there, and they're all feeling like really down, and Juliana's, what's going on? And then of course the astronaut steps onto the moon and says, via translation from Russia, we come in peace for Soviet Russia.
Yes.
We claim the moon for Soviet, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it turns out that the Americans lost the space race.
Yeah.
They didn't get to the moon before the Soviets. The N1 rocket managed to blast off, and they got there in, I think, June of 1969.
Yeah, just before the Americans were
just
supposed to.
Like a month before three weeks or whatever before the Americans.
Which is, to be honest, not so far off the possibility.
No, it was totally far off the possibility. And
really?
This is what I don't mind about, because the moment of divergence is about a year before, and the Soviets had their big N1 rocket with 30... 5 engines on it. They could never control them all at right. They didn't have gimbaling. They were doing thrust vectoring, all that kind of stuff. They never got them to... I think they tried to launch 4 of them and all 4 of them blew up. Maybe,
okay.
Maybe 3. Anyway, a few attempts that they had. They never got it to work.
Right. But in this show, they did get it to work.
And in this show, we'd already done it. And the Americans knew that they'd done it, but they didn't know how close they were.
Right.
And so the show begins with the Americans going, oh shit, we've lost this space race. What's the next thing that's going to happen? Like, what else do we need? Oh, and then it's going to be the big thing is we have to set up a base on the moon. Like, first, we've also got to get there, but we can't just be the second. Then we, what are the next big steps that we can do to beat the Russians to doing that thing?
Yes.
A base on the moon. In the future, they're thinking, oh, maybe we can get to Mars. That's too difficult. Let's just go to the moon. So the entire rest of the show is an alternate history. And in this alternate world where the space race didn't end with the Americans getting to the moon and it didn't end with the Russians getting to the moon.
Yes.
That was just the opening salvo in the Cold War space race where, and then so as soon as the moon mission finishes, it's not like, all right, not going to bother with the moon anymore. What are we going to do now? International Space Station or shuttle. You know, first it was the shuttle orbiters and getting them up, and then we're going to do the space station. Like in our current world, it's sort of like, yeah, they are going to develop, you know, all of the stuff that we have in our current world.
Yes.
Plus all of this other stuff, all of it in an accelerated time frame.
Yeah.
With things which have only ever been proposed in our real timeline, which then they're going, okay, this kind of rocket, let's do that. That kind of rocket, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
What were these other space scientists, like here's Wernher von Braun, what were his other plans that he was working on at the time?
Yeah.
What about this thing? What about that thing? And that carries on all the way through, that kind of goes through season one. Although season one is very much more just sort of much more, or the first half of season one is still very much Apollo kind of things. We've got to get to the moon.
Yes.
And the second half of it is like more moon base stuff. Season two skips forward 10 years into the 1980s.
Yeah.
The first stuff is happening in like late 60s, early 70s, like first part of the 70s. Skip forward 10 years or skip along the story 10 years.
Yeah.
And then we're in the 1980s and there is a moon base and there's all the Cold War politics-y, standoffish kind of stuff going on at the same time there. And I don't think we need to give anything more about the story, but that is the framework of the story. And all I knew going into it was an alternative timeline when NASA was beaten to the moon by the Russians.
Yes.
Oh, the Soviets. Anyway, so that's it. I say watch all of this. It's 20 episodes, 10 episodes in season one, 10 episodes in season two. If you want to know what Luke likes from television and what Luke's not perfect science fiction show, because again, it is very, it's a different kind of science fiction show than you would norm, than I've seen before.
Yes.
Focuses on different things.
Yeah.
But this is what I want. And we're going to talk, I'm going to want to talk about some more things why I like it, but I would, if you're interested in having exactly the same experience that me and Juliana had going into this, now you can. Just watch it.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth getting an Apple TV Plus subscription for a few months, watching this, watching Ted Lasso, maybe some other shows. We've literally not seen any other shows on there, have we? Oh no, you watched some house building one where people are building houses.
Yeah, was that I've on watched that one? Bits and pieces. And the Bridgertons, I think, is also a...
No, Bridgerton is not. Because Bridgerton is a TV show about people having sex, and Apple does not do that.
That's the Netflix.
I think what happens is, the confusion is that Apple TV is an app, and also Apple TV Plus is the stuff that Apple makes to put in the app.
Yes, it's difficult, and then Apple TV Plus shows the other shows that you watch on other apps, so it's a bit confusing. So I don't quite remember what else I watched on it. I think there were some other bits that I watched.
Yeah, it was some people building homes, and that's the ones with nice people building nice homes. That was also on Apple TV.
Yeah,
I think it's just called Homes or something.
Yeah, I think it's called Home.
Yeah.
Yes, some of these shows, which feel blatantly like some of the Netflix shows about
The grand designs.
The
grand designs. What is it? It's called the Extraordinary Homes,
yes.
One of those is with the BBC show.
I do like those things because I do have a thing for architecture and...
But moving on.
But moving on, I want to say one thing.
Okay, we've told people to watch it. Now we're going to tell very generally talking about what we like about the show. So let's go for that.
Yes, yeah. But I'm probably going to diverge a bit from what you think is going on. But I want to say, I find it such a pity that this show is not a show that everyone can just watch.
Yeah, they can. Everyone can just watch it. You just need to pay money. That's how television gets made in the end, unfortunately.
I know. But generally, it's in our times difficult to have all the subscriptions. And, you know, in the US, I think people have Hulu and other
things
and cable. And
what
I
I'm trying
know.
To say is, though, it's a pity that not everybody can watch it. But it turns out everybody can watch it. Like, if you've got a TV, you've probably got
a smart TV.
And there'll be an Apple TV app.
Yeah.
It's worth it for All Mankind season 1 and 2 and for Ted Lasso. And I think Ted Lasso season 2 is coming
out
soon.
These two shows, if you just pay, if you want to watch these shows, you
it's
just
worth
pay
$10.
A month. Yes. And now I actually now understand, because you don't need to actually buy an Apple TV.
No.
Because we just got ourselves a new TV because our previous TV was
had blotches on it,
and it turns out that
the apps are just built in already
in the smart TV app store of an LG one. You can just get the Apple Plus
right then
app.
Let's talk about the show. What does Luke like about the show? What I like about the show is it's only partly about the science fiction-y kind of people on the moon and people flying in spaceships. What I love about science fiction is what is different in the world and how does that change people and how does that change society?
Yes.
And what we get is lots of people having good excuses to do important scenes with big acting.
Yes.
And that this is all about important topics, like someone's going to space. It's very dangerous.
Yeah.
What does her wife think about that? Okay, let's have a good speech from the wife about how difficult it is to someone to be going into space. Someone needs to go on a mission, and it's very important. This is a very important political mission. Mm. And someone gets up and they give a speech about, like, in front of people to say this is an important mission. You really want that. Other people have relationships and they say long speeches to it. This is one of those shows where they have picked lots of actors, all of whom, I'd say 95% of the actors in this show are really good actors. And of course they are, because they're Hollywood actors and they've all been given these really chewy scenes. Mm. Even these characters who are kind of very much side characters for like 9 episodes. Suddenly in episode 10, they will be given a speech. And you are like, oh, that person could have done that. Like that actor was a good enough actor to do that speech at any point. Yeah. And now they get given it. And it's so good to have some people are all the way through season 1 and 2 minor parts, and suddenly they become a major part because that's how I guess space administration works.
Yeah.
And suddenly they and TV writing, but all of them are good enough to suddenly have an emotional heart to heart, not maybe a speech, but like suddenly there'll be a strong conversation between two people, and they're like, oh, you're good enough to do that as well.
I want to also say some stuff about what I liked about the show, and I want to make it a little bit more specific.
Okay.
Or maybe even less specific.
No. Let's just,
I want to go point by point. I want to say, yes, the casting is really good.
Yeah.
And the actors and actresses that they chose for this show are not like huge Hollywood stars who have starred in movies before, but they are very well people who regularly go on TV shows, who regularly have jobs, who know what they're doing, and the acting was touching.
Yeah.
Like, I had the acting and the casting is good. Yeah. Also, the writing is really good.
Yeah.
It takes you really on a roller coaster in one episode. One episode, it goes like super tense, super whatever.
Yeah.
You expect something, then it goes totally different. The emotion, like, it catches me.
Almost every single episode, there'll be moments where you're crying and then cheering and then devastated. Yeah. And not even devastated because like someone dies, because space is dangerous. It's more like something will happen and someone will make a small decision and you'll see the impact on other people. And it works great.
Yes.
I totally say. The casting is really good.
Yes.
The writing is top notch. And like I say, the drama that this allows, the interpersonal drama and all that kind of stuff is really top notch.
Yes.
Next big thing that Luke likes about this.
Yeah.
Space is dangerous.
Yes.
And this is, and just life is dangerous as well. This is yeah. This is an alternate history.
Hmm.
So when, and this is, it happens like very early on, but the Russians beat the Americans to the moon, but they still send up Apollo 11 because Apollo 10 had already been up there. We're like, well, let's go and land there anyway.
Yeah.
And because there's other stuff going on and we've already at a diverging timeline of, you know, what the Apollo landing would have been like in our world.
Yes.
Suddenly there's like some, they've got like a different fuel load because they'd already worked out some differences from what the Russians had done. I can't even remember exactly what it is, but Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin are going to land on the moon, and it's already established that you as a viewer don't know if they make it or not and don't know if they survive or not.
Yeah.
And that is one of those crazy things. You're like, oh, even if we know like the end of Apollo 13 when we're watching Apollo 13 in, you know, when we're watching, you know,
the movie. Yeah.
And there's actually quite a lot of overlap between this stuff. You know, the flight director in that one is in this one. You know, the set up is the same because these are real places and with real
lots
people.
Lots of the people that actually appear in this show are real.
Yeah, real people.
Real, not real people.
No, they
but
are real
they,
people.
They are the people that in our world did those jobs.
Yeah, Gene Kranz is the flight director.
Yes.
Played by, in this one, Eric Laden. But he's played by, I can't remember now, Ed Harris. Yeah, it's Ed Harris in Apollo 13. So it's those moments. But we know the end of Apollo 13.
Yeah.
We never know the outcome of any mission. So literally anything that happens in space, anything that happens anywhere at all, you don't know what the outcome is going to be.
Yeah.
In a way, because it has to be based in reality, you know that something has to be possible or something is likely, but you also know that everything's going to be dangerous. And there's a level of danger in this, which I never feel in like normal science fiction, normal sort of like The Expanse or Star Trek or anything. Because if you're a main character, you're going to make it through to the end. If something happens, you're there's going to be a science fictional thing that will come along to get you out of something.
Yeah.
And here there isn't.
But also, because it is an alternate history, it just means that everything developed in this time is still the same way it is developed in that time. And most other science fiction shows depict something in, I don't know, 200 years when people are on spaceships out in space and they explore the boundaries of the space. And so all the technology, all the space danger has kind of like leveled out.
Yeah.
And so they must come up with other dangers.
Yeah.
But here, the
danger is just like space is hard. Space is difficult.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Things are going to crash. Things are going to blow up.
Totally.
Things are just going to happen.
Yes.
And I love that the drama is at the level of space is hard.
Mm.
And that is in all the way through the first season.
Mm-hmm.
The second season more goes into, you know, Cold War in space. But the first season is just, we've got to get to the moon. That is a hard job.
Yes.
Carry on.
Yes.
And it's so great that the makers of this show love space so much and are such big nerdy NASA fans that they can just be like, let's just talk to all the astronauts, not even astronauts, let's talk to all the technicians to say, what were the difficult problems that you, I haven't read this that happened on the Wikipedia page, but it feels like, let's just think about all the things that could have happened on these missions.
Yeah.
If this had gone slightly different, what would have happened and how would they have solved that problem?
Yeah.
If that had gone slightly different, what could have happened when this happens? If someone leaves this switch on when they shouldn't have done, what would happen and how could we solve that problem? So all of the drama, like all of the non-interpersonal drama, plays out in the space is hard and space is dangerous level.
Yes.
Most importantly, then those two connect up with each other. That space is difficult and space is dangerous plays into all of the relationships back home, which I want to talk on a bit more later on.
Yes, of course.
The other thing which I like about the space tech is that it's not all, but a lot of it feels, because it's all based on like 1960s, 1970s tech, feels very solidly possible, even though, of course, when they're on the moon, when they're outside in the spacesuits, gravity is one sixth of Earth gravity.
They're hopping around.
And when they're inside and they're in the spacesuit, they're hopping around and bumping. And then if they're just inside the space base or inside the space, they're just like, oh, it doesn't matter. We're just going to do it. And yeah. That level goes on time and time again. Like, some things do happen at the speed of plot. They skip over long periods in time in space, and it's totally fine.
Yes.
It's almost every shortcut that they make for just making television like possible to make, that all of the budget doesn't go on, you know, putting people on strings for like acting in a space base, yeah, to do that. All of it work. The choices that they make fit Luke's brain.
Yeah. And we can there take that parallel to books.
Yeah.
There are science fiction books that you read, and the frame is good, the characters are fun,
yeah,
and then there are some slight things that might not make 100% sense at, yeah, that point, but it's just, it fits it, and it, yeah, is introduced.
You can let it work.
And you know, it is first of all fiction, and here in this particular show, it is movie.
Yeah, it's television movie
style.
Yeah.
And it's not, it's television.
Yeah.
And it's not a big movie.
Well, it has a lot of budget. You can definitely see that Apple has spent a lot of money on it. It was Sony Pictures production.
Absolutely.
Was the one that, it was actually the producers and making it.
Yes.
Sony.
It does
Studios.
Not look cheap.
No, what is it called? Sony Television Studio Production Company.
Or
like,
yeah.
It always comes up at the start, yeah, and you're like, wow, that's a five, yeah, word.
And the set designs are really cool.
Yeah.
It does feel like
it works good. Also, just the period piece, like,
yeah,
how period,
I mean,
it is.
Yeah.
All right. So that's all Luke talking about television. Great acting, mostly great script. Again, I do have some quibbles with some of the plotting and some of the storylines, but I totally understand. Again, 99% of them, I understand what they're dealing with, and that they have to put this stuff on screen somehow,
yes,
with the choices that they make.
Yeah.
Especially some of the stuff that happens at the very end of season two. I'm like, well, okay, well, I guess we'll go with it. But
yeah,
again, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with any of it. It's just some weird choices that I don't think land 100% of the time.
Yes.
But if I'm giving this thumbs up, thumbs down, popcorn rating, Rotten Tomatoes score, whatever it is,
yeah,
this is one of the few TV shows, and I'm not talking about science fiction TV shows,
but TV shows.
One of the few TV shows which I would unabashedly say that it is very, very, very good, like to the standard where I would just watch it again, no problem,
yeah,
at all.
Yeah.
And there's maybe three other television shows in Luke's television watching history,
yeah,
where I could say the same. Again, we haven't had season 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7, but just the first
of
two
course.
Seasons, like top notch television.
Yeah.
Really high rated.
Absolutely.
Television. Okay, the other introduction that I thought I might have done at the,
yeah,
start of this podcast was me comparing this to, well, not comparing this,
oh,
contrasting this to,
oh, I know.
Well, I mentioned it in the last podcast that we did the other day, which is the Calculating Stars, the Lady Astronaut series by Mary Robinette Cowell.
Yes.
And to prepare for this, I thought, when I mentioned this before, I was like, oh, I want to compare it to that,
yeah,
more favorably. But today, I listened to that podcast, you know, when I'm doing lunch and other bits and pieces, and
yeah,
before watching the Formula One and afterwards and stuff.
What podcast?
I listened to my review of the Calculating Stars by, we did this episode back in, when was this? It'll say here somewhere, 2018.
Okay.
And in this book, I was, and I literally said it's the most disappointing book that I've ever read, which I'll get onto in a bit, but I was, since then, I've read worse books, but
yes,
in this one, and I realized, and I've mentioned this a few times before, I'm like, why am I holding the Calculating Stars, a book that I gave 0.5 stars to? I was like, how am I having better memories of this, and why am I considering this a better book than all of these, you know, other books that I've read, like The Last Astronaut and The Last Emprox, and
yeah,
some of these other books.
In The Quick, wasn't that also?
Yeah, In The Quick. Yeah. To be clear, In The Quick and The Last Astronaut are both Lady Astronaut books, which are relying on you caring about Lady Astronauts doing, you know, the Martian-style problem-solving in space.
Yeah.
Whatever. And I was like, how have I got good memories of the better memories of The Calculating Stars, a book that made me so angry?
Yeah.
And it was only now that listening back to it, I realized why I was so angry. And it's not because it's a terrible book, because it isn't a terrible book. Like, the stuff that is in the book isn't terrible.
Yes.
But it's terrible because...
Some bits are a bit weird.
Yeah, you didn't read it, did you?
No, yeah, but again, I remember you telling me about interesting sex conversations.
Let's not talk about the sex scenes. We actually talked about that too much in that podcast that I read. It's like an hour and 20 minutes we talk about this, and you laughing at the me recounting the sex scenes in the book is terrible. But here's the thing. The meta point of it was that it was a book about lady astronauts in an alternate timeline,
mm-hmm.
which I was very annoyed with, because it was written from the point of view of somebody who doesn't care about all of the stuff that I want, by somebody who doesn't care about all the stuff that I care about.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Robinette Cowell isn't a massive space nerd. She's not a massive NASA fan girl.
Is she not?
No, it's obvious in the book. She doesn't care about space. She doesn't care about what it takes to be an astronaut.
Okay.
She doesn't care about rockets. She doesn't care about anything, because all of that is missing from the book. The main character shows no interest in any of those things, even though her husband is a rocket technician and a rocket mm-hmm. engineer. At some point in the book, she's
okay.
talking... No. I have to finish this point. You can't interrupt me here. Please let me finish this point. In the book, she mentions the fact that there's a space station up there that's getting so big that they can spin it to get artificial gravity, and then never mentions it again for the rest of the book. It gets to the point where there's going to be a launch, and the character in the book says, oh, and there was a launch, I guess I should talk about it a bit. It was good, it went up, and it was spectacular. And I'm like, you have to care about this. The main character in the book didn't seem to care about being an astronaut. She wanted to be an astronaut, but she kept on saying she wanted to be an astronaut, but none of the actions that she took in the book and none of the words that she was saying were communicating with me that she actually cared about it. None of the things that she was concentrating on, which is a big issue with me, because the reason why I gave The Martian 5 stars is because... who's the author? Andy Weir cares so much about all that technical stuff that the whole book was all that
depth.
Technical stuff.
Yeah.
When he tried doing that again, he's failed a few more times to bring over that caringness about technical stuff. So I don't want every book to be Andy Weir solving problems in space. Sorry, Mark Watney solving problems on the moon, Mars. The other one, Artemis, is welding on the moon. Like, I don't want books to be that without all of the relationship stuff and the society stuff. But with The Calculating Stars, it was written from the point of view of someone who doesn't actually care about science fiction or space or NASA in the 60s or 50s or anything,
mm-hmm.
about someone who is nominally wants to be an astronaut to go into space. But because Mary Robinette Cowell doesn't have that same passion for space and rocketry and all those other kinds of stuff, she just didn't know what to put in the book. Mm-hmm. Like, she didn't understand the mind of somebody who is willing to go into space.
Okay.
And that's what was really disappointing. The meta point, and this is how I finish that podcast, is I'm really, really annoyed that Mary Robinette Cowell wrote a book called The Lady Astronaut, which is an alternate timeline history where NASA now is going to send people into space, but instead of them all being men, some of them are going to be women. Mm. And I said, in fact, I should bring up my notes here, because I just made some notes here at the end, and this is the most important point I'm going to make in this entire podcast. So let me just get to this one. The note I said is, I said also I predicted it would win the Hugo and Nebula Awards the next year. It did. I said this is detractive from the world. This book will stop other people from attempting the same story. My main complaint is that the story of the Lady Astronaut is now claimed by an author and a story that didn't care about space or rockets or being an astronaut, what it takes to be an astronaut, the challenges of becoming an astronaut, the dangers of being an astronaut, the politics of being an astronaut, or anything at all. And that say, this book will stop other people from attempting the same story. And I'm not saying that is the case in science fiction, but it feels like if someone does, oh, I'm doing the alternate history where astronauts are ladies too, or ladies can also be astronauts, really, I was angry with the fact that somebody who didn't care about astronauts or space or rockets got to claim that story, and that it was obviously that people were longing for that story so much that it was going to win the Hugo and the Nebula Award the next year, and it did. Like, if you've got a Hugo, if you've got a Hugo Award winning book with one concept, it's, no, don't worry about it, it's really difficult for other people then to have another go at that and do it better with the things that Luke cares about. I was like, it's annoying. I'm really upset about this book on a meta level because it's detracting, it's diminishing the possibility that I'm going to get a book about Lady Astronauts, an alternate timeline history of NASA going into space, but with Lady Astronauts. I said, if you want to feel what this is really like for people who are really passionate about space, watch the Mercury 13 documentary on Netflix. And what I find so fantastic about For All Mankind is that while Mary Robinette Cowell pissed in the water and spoiled this for everyone else with her garbage book about somebody, and what that whole podcast is me saying 8 hours of the book is just saying, I want to be an astronaut. No, you can't, because we're all sexist around here. Repeat for 8 hours, you know. And at the end of the book, she's still not an astronaut. It takes a 10 hours of a 12-hour audiobook to be accepted into the astronaut program. I'm just like, come on, come on. Anything at all to do with any of this stuff would be great. And this TV show, For All Mankind, paid me back all of the anger and all of the anguish and all of the dread that I had for the future, that nobody was going to attempt an alternate storyline where in the 1960s and 70s there could be also women astronauts, lady astronauts taking part in the space race, going to the moon and kind of all that kind of stuff. Everything that I was pissed off with and annoyed about with the Calculating Stars, For All Mankind has let all of that go. Has healed me. Yeah. Has healed me of all the frustration and anger that I felt that for the Lady Astronaut book one. Again, not the full story. This probably gets better later on. But all of the frustration and the disappointment, that why I actually said, and to this day, the Lady Astronaut book one, The Calculating Stars, is still to this day the most disappointing book that I've ever read, because it promised everything that I wanted it to be in the opening section, in the opening of the book, and the premise of the book, and it didn't give me that for the rest of the book past the opening 30 minutes of the audiobook, of a 12-hour audiobook.
Yeah.
And it just diddled me around and said, hey, do you want the story of someone who's perfect and they don't have to do any work and they just happen to be the most perfect person in the world ever, who doesn't have to work at anything, doesn't really seem to care about it, is just waiting around for 10 hours of a 12-hour audiobook just for everyone to realize that she's capable of being an astronaut and that she should be going into space as the first woman astronaut. And I'm like, no, that's not what I want. I want a world where suddenly women have an opportunity to become astronauts, which is what happens in For All Mankind, and then they have to work their asses off to get there, and they have to go through all of the sexism, and they have to go against all of the politics and everything, all of the things that happen in For All Mankind season one and season two, but mostly season one.
Yeah.
It turns out season one of For All Mankind is the Lady Astronaut story, because they get to the end of episode two and the next big twist in the story is that you're like, oh, all these astronauts are going into space and it's all testosterone and woohoo, we should do something more dangerous, yeehaw, you know, and all the astronauts are driving their Corvettes around backwards and forwards, you know, across Houston, and it's all that. And then the second landing on the moon, one of the astronauts is a lady Russian astronaut, and they're like, We need to get some ladies into the NASA program. And I'm like, this is the story. And I remember, like, when we were watching on the couch, like, reaching over to you and going, oh, this is what the show is. And that is actually what the show is. It is the Lady Astronaut show. Of course, you can say alternate timeline. Of course, they're still male astronauts. But what it comes down to, the story that it is actually telling for 8 episodes of season one, is women in space. Is it possible? What do they have to go through to get to earn their place?
Yeah.
All of that stuff. And it's fantastic.
That's good. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't have anything to say to this.
And I didn't want you to say anything.
There was
this
no
is
space
me.
For me to say anything.
This is cathartic for me
I
to
understand.
Share with everyone that if you listen to me ranting about the Lady Astronaut book number one, Calculating Stars, for an hour and 20 minutes back in 2018, now is the time for me to say Luke is healed.
Yes.
And for all mankind, healed Luke.
That's good.
And that's it.
Okay.
Also, not just astronauts, like other people in NASA as well, but
yes.
Also astronauts.
Yes.
Go for it.
Yeah. When did that Lady Astronaut book come out?
2018.
And when were they working on All Mankind?
Probably about the same time.
Right.
In fact, let me just go over and hear. No, the thing is, I don't think they're connected. When does it say here? Premise, recurring figures, lots of stuff about here. Development. It was December 2017. It was announced that Apple had given the production of the season one order. But here's the thing.
That's good.
I didn't know that this was actually about Lady Astronauts until...
No, but why,
after...
Yes.
Yeah. Because that isn't this... what... The premise isn't, this is
no.
the Lady Astronaut story.
No.
And it's better for it because it creeps up on you and then you realize this is what it is and yeah, carry on.
At the same time though, it is so much more and that's what I like about this show. It takes so many battles. It actually does the battles, but it takes them and it shows them, and in such a human way.
Yeah,
like you see the people, they just don't put their blind eye towards things.
No.
They lay it all out, and they lay out all the hurt, all
yeah.
the everything that's being in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s
yeah.
that's being done to people.
Yeah.
And they treat it like they have it
it's
in the show.
They're real
they're
issues.
They're not running away from those issues.
Yeah.
And I really like that because they don't... just do like a they don't take it easy on themselves.
Yeah.
And of course you can say in some like Star Trek does handle some of these things.
No, but they're not handling it in 1960s and 70s America.
Let me finish.
Yeah, okay.
It is an early show, like it goes from
yeah.
early on, like, and they had like these funny iron shaped weapons, and
are we talking about Star Trek now?
Yes.
Yeah.
But throughout Star Trek history we know that they tackle big things, but it's always like really, I wouldn't say subtle, because it isn't subtle.
No, but it's
but
second
it is,
order.
It is,
they're
yes.
talking about racism in
yeah.
with like some people who are left, white on their left and black on their right, and other people who are black on their left and white on their right. You know, they're talking about all those kind of things, and there is politics in there.
Yes.
But it is about space exploration. It is about society and all these things.
Exactly.
But For All Mankind is about the struggles of women and black people and Hispanic people
yeah,
and all
LGBTQ
of these other people.
Or, and
yes, gay people in there as well. And it is these issues are
yeah.
the drama.
Yeah.
That is where the drama comes from.
Yeah.
A few points. Lady Astronaut book, and I only remember this because I listened to the podcast through here. I was saying that it mentions race, but only at the level of like, oh yeah, some of my friends are black, because everything is told from the point of view of this woman who is is a very privileged white woman, happens to be Jewish, but her Jewishness only comes out in the fact that, oh, she goes around to someone's house and they cook something in pork fat, or, and
okay.
that's about as far as it goes.
Right.
And I even mentioned she meets Werner von Braun, and it kind of like, oh, that's mildly inconvenient. She's mildly whatever. Werner von Braun and his storyline and what
yeah.
comes out about what he's doing is a major
yeah.
source of drama in that
yes.
first series, to the point that like I'm in tears when
yes.
the people are addressing the fact and they are in tears. And I'm like, this scene
yes.
is the scene that I wanted in the Lady
because
Astronaut
book.
Because
it shows that it's hard.
Yes.
Humans are... crazy. Some people are more crazy than others, and it takes what people do, and it shows that people can be bad, like cruel and
yeah.
awful, and crazily like looking forward, like genius kind of like mindsets, and it lays everything bare.
Yeah,
and by laying it bare, it just you don't need to add drama. That is the drama.
There is enough drama here. Exactly. And that was the thing that annoyed me about the Calculating Stars, is that all of the drama was just at that surface level of, I want to be an astronaut. You can't, you're a woman. Okay, then I'll just wait. I want to be an astronaut. You can't, you're a woman. Okay, I'll just do something. Yeah. At one point, the main source of drama in that book comes from, like, she discovers she's got some old invalid aunt. And she suddenly has to go over and visit the aunt, and she's like, "Oh, that's a real pity, because today is the day that there's the astronaut entry exam." Mm. And I'd much prefer. And I think, what do I do? Do I go and look after my aunt who's ill, or do I take the astronaut exam to become an astronaut, which I've been saying it for the rest of the book that I want to be an astronaut? And she can't decide. And I'm like, no. And in For All Mankind, you would have that same kind of thing. And you're like, all right, what are you going to do? Look after your elderly relative or something? Or be an astronaut. They're like, astronaut, it doesn't matter. Astronaut is what I want to do.
Or and in this show, it's what do you do? Do you look after your children?
Astronaut. No, I'm going to do an astronaut.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, people are so passionate about being astronauts that they do it to the exclusion of their personal relationships. And then that is where the drama comes from.
Yes.
Whereas in the Lady Astronaut book, The Calculating Star, the first one, again, I'm not reviewing the ones I haven't read, just the first one, is that it feels like the personal drama comes from, oh, I don't want to upset some people. And they're sort of like, where's the drama in people not wanting to upset people? Mm. I don't want drama to come from people not wanting to upset people.
Yeah.
And at one point they were going to upset each other, but it was just a misunderstanding, and then they explain the misunderstanding, you're like, oh, everything's fine again.
Yeah.
In the Lady Astronaut book, there's this scene where all of the other lady astronauts get together and like, well, we have each other and all that kind of stuff. And I never felt it. I wasn't convinced by it. I'm like, there's none of these people have shared any experiences on the page of the book to make me think that they actually care for each other. Yeah. I said, all I wanted was one of the scenes from G.I. Joe, the movie with Demi Moore, where she has to be a Marine. Mm. Or no, SAS? No, not SAS. No, Navy SEAL. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
She wants to be a Navy SEAL, and they put her through the Navy SEAL, and like the whole thing is about her training to be a Navy SEAL and coming up against the things that the men are treated this way and she's treated other ways, and the men help each other but don't help her. All of those things that I wanted, I said, I want one scene like that from the Lady Astronaut, from the Calculating Stars, and we didn't get a single scene of that kind of thing. Yep. The only scene that we had was one training exercise where she came out and she happened just to break the record for doing the best of that anybody's ever done in that kind of thing. Like, she never failed. And For All Mankind, we get all of those scenes that I wanted. We get the women going up in jets until they vomit. We get them traipsing around in the desert until they collapse from exhaustion. We get them hurting each other.
Also,
not hurting each other. But
we get to see them, that it's not all like, oh, just because we're women, we're all happy together and help each other.
No.
That's just not how it goes.
But there were those moments. In the Lady Astronaut book, they have this thing where they get together and gossip about different things, and you're like, oh, and at the end they're like, oh, well, this is great, we'll always have this group, we'll always care for each other. And I was like, I don't buy it. But the astronauts' wives back at home, you see those bonds forming, even though they don't actually like each other, and even though that they don't have anything in common with each other except that all of their husbands are astronauts.
You're not talking about the show or
I'm
the
talking
book?
About, no, I'm talking about the For All Mankind.
Right,
we
yes.
see oh, yeah. what they have in common is that they all get around to each other's houses when someone's in space.
They bring food.
And they bring food, and they watch their husbands go into orbit to maybe die.
Yeah.
And then when that does happen, or when they're not quite sure what's happening, one of them takes charge. It's actually Deke's wife, isn't it? Deke Slayton's wife. Because Deke
She's
is the...
Like Deke.
Yeah. She suddenly just goes, okay, you stay here looking to this person. You and me, we're going over to Buzz Aldrin's wife's house. We're going to go and sort it out here. And you're like, oh, even if they don't like each other and all being bitches to each other, they form that bond.
Yes.
And you just see it there.
Yeah.
And it's amazing drama, because you're like, oh, that's what I want from drama.
Yeah.
I want to see people doing dangerous stuff, people with their backs up against the wall, and people pulling together to do stuff even if they don't like each other.
Yeah.
Not like The Calculating Stars, where everyone happens to just like everyone else because it's because we want to like the main characters. Mm. I didn't like most of the main characters for a lot of For All Mankind, even though you end up sympathizing with them, yeah, and they end up doing heroic things or they don't end up. And even the characters who you really like, sometimes they'll just do
they
something
do
and
stuff
you're like,
that
ah,
you think, oh, like they're humans.
No,
that's the
not
point.
That, yes.
Like, I don't think, even if you have friends that you really, really like, I don't think they do everything.
No.
Everything
they're
correct.
Gonna make decisions
they're
which
gonna,
fuck people over.
Yes, and then you're gonna get yourself together and say, okay, is this still worth me putting in a relationship or not? And we do have that in this show, and it's amazing how they manage to get these connections. Like, they build up something in your brain and then something happens, somebody does something and you're like angry with them.
Yeah.
And just the way that they are getting these emotions, I mean, of course it's visual and it is really good acting, but I think often in or sometimes in books, when you have characters that are just written a bit flat or you know, this kind of writing of characters that are three-dimensional.
Yeah.
They're not just, okay, everything they do is perfect.
Everything
is whatever.
Because most of it is there isn't an antagonist. There isn't a bad guy. There isn't the bad girl. There isn't anything like that.
Because
it's like,
the world is always way more complex.
Way more complex than that.
And they show this complexity so good.
Again, it is a bit simplistic because, again, everything has to be
fit into
an episode of television. So it's fine.
Well, obviously. But I think they show all the complexity, that it isn't just, okay, we can solve it by black and white. It always has more than one aspect to it.
Mm.
And if it is then on top of that, oh, the politics.
Yeah.
You know.
But also the politics in this book are good because it works
in
at the level of like, what's that?
In the TV show.
In the TV show, yeah. It's great because it's all about like, there is politics going on in the background, like national politics, but you realize, oh, all the politics is done here in these rooms where you get a politician in, tell them one thing, get another politician in, tell them the opposite thing, get somebody else in, tell them that, and then tell your bosses, oh, we're doing this, and then tell your underlings we're doing this, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And I really enjoyed all that other stuff that's like the whirling in the background, which you haven't even touched on in this way, which I don't need to go into. But yeah, this is the lady astronaut story that wanted, even when that's less of an issue in season two, because they're like, oh,
it's
women are now just established. But again, it's so great that when you get to the end of season two, or when you're going through season two, you're like, oh, the women are in charge now. And you're like, that's really handy that some of the conflict is between quite a bit of the conflict in the second season is between I don't want to say, you know, male toxic masculinity being tempered and solved by women doing what they want to do.
Yeah.
But it is that a bit.
But
I'm
also
totally fine with that.
But also, you know what I really liked about this show?
Yeah.
It shows men being vulnerable, men having massive mental issues, PTSD, everything comes together, breaking together, and the like. It shows that it doesn't matter what, if you're a woman or a man.
Yeah,
a man can be like that, and women can be like hard, like oh my god, did she really just do that?
Mm.
You know, and. And that is also what I really love about this show. It doesn't show stereotypical things. It shows humans in how
in
all of variety and diversity and what can happen.
But
and
that
doesn't happen. Like,
no.
we did Top Gun.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh, no, please don't compare this to Top Gun.
I'm not, but you're comparing it heavily to one book that I haven't read.
Which is about Lady Astronaut.
I understand.
It's called Lady Astronaut. It's alternate timeline history where women get to go into space.
Totally fine.
Okay.
And it's fair that you do that, that you do compare it. But I also want to say that we watch Top Gun, and that's like one of the most, you know.
It might as well be called Gay Testosterone, the movie.
Yes. But.
Well, not gay, I mean, but like.
Yeah, there it also has some men crying something. But what they do in
homoerotic
in all of Mankind is just really honest.
Mm.
And bare and yeah. And
but But there's so many good scenes. Just the scene where they're sitting down and they're like, right, we need some women astronauts. And they're like, oh. And they start going through the names. They literally go, here's some people from the Mercury 13. Like, we've already got a list. And like, but that was 10 years ago. Yeah. Or that was 9 years ago. Yeah. What are they going to do now? And they're looking at them and like, well, she's too old. She's not going to be good. We can get back like 3 of these. What other astronauts, whatever women pilots have we got? We go through
give
them.
Give me names.
Yeah, give me names and photos. And they're like, and someone who's good looking, her, what's she? And they're like, and then they bring out the actual thing, which is in the movie Calculating Stars, that she is one of the mathematicians, she's one of the computers, she's one of the people who does the hidden figures bit that from the movie, which we still haven't watched, which we should watch at some point.
It's in my to watch list.
But they even say to one of them, they bring someone out and they say Danielle Poole, and they're like, and they're looking at it, it's a black woman, and they're like, no, like that, and they push the paper away and they push it back, and they're like, no, it's great, she already works for NASA, like she's a pilot,
she's right here, and she can do it.
Yeah, her father was a pilot, she was a pilot, she actually works here, she's already like, mm-hmm. she's already one of our computers. And they're like, well, I guess we'll have a black lady astronaut candidate,
like they were then okay with the step, let's bring a woman in.
But not a black woman. And then they're like, no, let's do it. And they're like, oh, but that meeting is so good because they're all going, oh, fuck, we've got to do affirmative action. Oh, we've got to be seen to be doing the right thing. And they're like, look, all of them are going to fail out anyway. Well, we still got to test them. We got to bring them through. And again, like most of them do fail anyway, but it's, and they get down to 5 of them, don't they? Within that first episode, they're like, 5 of these are going to, of these 12, 20 women are going to be good enough. But yeah, it shows how difficult it is for them to get where they want to go.
Yes.
It wasn't just handed to them. And then on the Russian side, later on, when they meet some Russians, they're like, oh, I always wanted to go a pilot. I always wanted to fly. And then there was some space and there was an opportunity and I grasped it and I loved it and I did it great and it was fantastic. And what do you, and how did you get into space? And the Russian astronaut is like, oh yeah, I was a pilot. And my commanding officer says, you are going into the astronaut program. And he says, okay. And then I was an astronaut. That's really great. A really fun scene when the talking to the Russian astronauts. But yeah, that passion and that difficulty that the women go through, those scenes was everything that I wanted the Calculating Stars to be. And from the title being Lady Astronaut and as an alternate history, everything that I expected the Calculating Stars to be, of how difficult it's going to be just to be a pilot, it is just to be an astronaut and then to be a woman astronaut and then to be a black woman astronaut.
We see the struggle and also we can feel it. Like I was watching some of these episodes and, I was...
It's just so dangerous.
It was exhausting because like I was
so stressful.
It was making me have all those emotions that these people went through. So, I think people do understand now how we feel about this show.
Yeah. Trailblazing pilot Wally Funk will go to space 60 years after passing her astronaut test. Wally Funk, the youngest of the Mercury 13, will join the inaugural crewed flight of Blue Origin's new Shepard capsule.
Yes.
This shows me that Jeff Bezos is way more of a space fan than Mary Robin Cowell. And I know it's really weird to do this, but if I was gonna, let me put it this way, the makers of For All Mankind are way bigger space fans than Mary Robinette Carroll, who got to write the first lady astronaut story. And in the end, this is what I got. This is what I got. I got the story of women astronauts in alternate timeline going into space in the 1970s. I got it from people who cared about the same things. Like when they show at one point, the Apollo module on top of one of the things, I was like, they got the details right. Look, it's standing up there. And at the end of the first season, when they show this thing launching, they're like, what's this happening out in the sea? Oh, it's this thing. And I turned to you and was like grabbing you. I was like, it's a sea dragon. It's a sea dragon. And then it was a sea dragon comes up and I was like, it's a sea dragon. And that becomes like a plot point later on in the second season. I was like, oh, all the cool stuff that the space nerds would want from one of these shows. I got all of that. Well, not all of it. And again, some of it is a bit dodgy and scientific grounds, whatever. But it pushed all of my buttons in the way that I want science fiction, alternate timeline, women get to go into space and take part in the space race, everything that I wanted The Calculating Stars to be, and failed, which is why I called it the most disappointing book that I've ever read in the history of the Science Fiction Book Review podcast. I am healed. I am made whole.
That's good.
Let's wrap
finally.
It up there.
Okay, from now on, I mean, this book keeps coming up.
It doesn't have to come up in the same way that we never have to bring up. We never have to bring up The Last Emperor ever again. We never have to bring up In the Quick. We never have to bring up The Last Astronaut.
That brings
it's done.
It, that brings it.
It brings it to a close. Okay. I'm never going to compare anything to the Lady Astronaut series
That's
ever
good.
Again. Although, you know what? I might read the next book. I might, because maybe book two, this has healed me. I might read book two in the next book of the Calculating Stars series. It could be for me now.
Okay, maybe I read it before you and then tell you.
I might just give it a go. Maybe next month you'll hear me singing the praises. Because everything that was missing from the first book, I got from elsewhere. And now it can just be, we're going to Mars or we're going into space. We're having space adventures.
Good.
And it could just be what I want.
All right. Maybe
let's wrap
that's
it up there. What have we done, an hour?
Let's all just imagine Luke sitting in front of a really big book.
And that's it. Enjoying.
And he's closing the lid.
Enjoying the book and closing it down and
this
being like,
it.
I am healed. Right, let's wrap it up there. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.